11 on the agenda, Lake Powell, total maximum daily load and near shore status update, Colorado County and Placer County. First ask for a staff report.
That's okay. Hello, Vince. Thanks again to everybody for all the work that went in, and thanks for the board's comments on the last item. It was really gratifying to get to that point, and we're confident moving forward in the spirit of cooperation, so it feels good for sure.
Can you introduce yourself just for the...
Yes, you bet. My name's Bob Larson, I'm a staff environmental scientist working with the Water Board on Lake Powell TMDL implementation and management. I'm here again this evening, this time to talk about the Lake Tahoe TMDL and near shore status update. It's been a bit over a year since the US EPA approved the Lake Tahoe TMDL 2011 Federal Summit. We spent a lot of time last year and sometime this year working on the NPDES permit to implement the most important element of the TMDL. We've also been busy with a few other program efforts, and we wanted to take a few minutes this evening to update you on some of that work. Following my brief talk, I'll turn the floor over to Dan Sussman, who will present to the board on our efforts related to Lake Tahoe's near shore environment and aquatic invasive species issues. Before I get started, I wanted to quickly review some of the important points about the TMDL implementation approach. This table summarizes the big picture of the TMDL program, and I know most of you have heard this many times before, so I'll be quick. Fine sediment particles, less than 16 micrometers in size, are the primary driver of Lake Tahoe's transparency. That's why this chart shows values for fine sediment particles and not nutrients. That's not to say that nutrients are not important, they are, particularly phosphorus, but to simplify our discussion, let's stick with fine sediment particles here. Looking at the first column, the percentage of the problem, almost 3/4 of the fine sediment particle load comes from urban stormwater runoff. Roadways and large commercial areas contribute a disproportionate amount of this load. The second largest source of particles is dust, talking about direct atmospheric deposition of dust onto the lake surface. Runoff from forested lands contributes a little less than 10% of that total load, while erosion of stream bed and banks contributes the remaining 4%. Looking at the second column, recall that we established the Clarity Challenge as an interim 15-year milestone. To halt transparency decline and start the restoration of Lake Tahoe's historic clarity, we need to reduce the fine sediment particle load reaching Lake Tahoe by about a third. About a quarter of that reduction, 24%, is expected to come from urban stormwater management actions. Which brings us to the last column, the percentage of the solution. That 24% of the 32% represents close to 80% of the load reduction effort needed to achieve the Clarity Challenge. The smallest portion of the solution, about 3%, is expected from forest land management actions. So why am I rehashing this? Our TMDL programmatic effort has been and continues to be focused on managing, tracking, and monitoring actions needed to reduce urban stormwater loading. If our TMDL is to be successful, we have to reduce urban pollutant loading, and this is why most of what I'm going to talk about for the next 10 minutes is focused on maintaining our emphasis on urban stormwater runoff and our efforts to effectively manage the TMDL program into the future. So that all said, here are the three topics I plan to cover this evening. First, I'm excited to tell you a bit about a project underway to improve the efficiency of the Lake Clarity Crediting Program through the Tools Integration Project. I'll then talk a bit about some of the new developments related to the Regional Stormwater Monitoring Program, and then finish my presentation by introducing the Lake Tahoe TMDL Management System concept. Late last year, we did a couple of workshops to discuss aspects of the municipal NPDES permit. I presented to this board and others details of the Lake Clarity Crediting Program. And as you probably remember, that program provides us with an innovative tool to track pollutant load reductions from urban stormwater discharges. It does so by linking management actions to expected benefits. The crediting program relies on a continuous simulation model, the pollutant load reduction model, to generate estimates of average annual pollutant loading. The program also relies on two different field methodologies to confirm that on the ground roadway and treatment BMP conditions are consistent with model parameters. These tools were all developed independently, each with its own data management structure and input and output formats. As we heard loud and clear from the co-permittees last December, The resulting system could be cumbersome and inefficient. Multiple data entry points and the need for users to re-enter data in several locations, coupled with the fact that none of the databases were directly linked, added to significant potential for user error. To address this issue, the Water Board and the Nevada Division of Environmental Protection scraped together funds to develop a single integrated stormwater tool. The integrated tool project was started late last year with the explicit goal of improving the Lake Clarity Crediting Program user experience. Based on feedback from our implementing partners, the project is developing a web-based user interface that will combine the data input and output functions of the various tools of the Lake Clarity Crediting Program and the associated load reduction tracking processes. The project team held a brainstorming session with local government partners in the spring of this year and has since been working on the information management structure and website design. The integrated tool is expected to ease the administrative burden associated with the Lake Clarity Crediting Program by simplifying the data entry process, providing for a single web-based interface for program interactions, and by integrating the data management structure. I just said that. The project team has crafted a mock-up of the various user interface screens. This is an example of the draft catchment credit schedule screen. There's a copy of it at the tail end of the board's packet if you'd like to look closer at that. The project is on schedule and to have a working version of the integrated tool for testing by early next calendar year, with a final working product by spring of 2013. We are really excited and proud of this project. We simply cannot implement the Lake Clarity Crediting Program without the help of our urban partners. It has to work for them as well as for us. We've done our best to listen to the feedback from local government, and this is just another example of how the Water Board and NDEP are devoting time and resources to help achieve our shared goals. Moving on to monitoring. As you may remember, the NPDES permit included a set of water quality monitoring requirements to help gather data regarding how well the crediting program estimation and condition assessment tools are reflecting measured water quality. Those requirements were crafted to align with a larger vision of a coordinated, collaborative, regional stormwater monitoring program. With the help of federal funding, the permittees are working with each other and their Nevada counterparts to draft a monitoring plan and conduct the required monitoring. And as I mentioned earlier in the evening, that effort is taking a little bit of time, but it's on track to meet the NPDES monitoring requirements. The regional program, again affectionately known as RSMAL, was developed to align various urban stormwater monitoring projects to best use limited available resources. Although initial RSWAMP efforts have developed a broad monitoring plan and have drafted sampling and quality assurance guidelines, there have been few resources devoted to establishing the needed organizational framework to actually implement the program. I'm happy to report that with Water Board staff support, the Tahoe Resource Conservation District has been granted funding to help meet that program need. The grant will provide $760,000 to bring academic researchers, monitoring consultants, and local government partners together to guide future monitoring efforts. The program will establish a centralized structure for organizing and administering the program. It will augment existing water quality monitoring efforts, and most importantly, develop and implement a centralized database to house urban stormwater monitoring information. This is a huge step forward. It's important to have an impartial third party that can organize and lead regional monitoring efforts. In the Bay Area, the San Francisco Estuary Institute serves this role. And here in Tahoe, it will be the Tahoe Resource Conservation District. The district is uniquely positioned to provide technical support and the much-needed leadership to organize monitoring work, coordinate data analysis and reporting, and help direct future monitoring resources to meet our shared interests. We're currently working with the RCD to finalize the scope of work and expect this three-year project to be underway next year. Once complete, the RSWAMP programmatic infrastructure can be used to justify and secure funding to support future monitoring efforts. So again, we're very excited that the Regional Stormwater Monitoring Program is moving forward and that the Water Board has been able to help fund that important effort. The last topic I wanted to cover this evening is the Lake Tahoe TMDL management system. Let's start first with an introduction to the management system concept. In general, management systems are used to formalize an adaptive management process to bridge the gaps between program planning, implementation, and actual achievement of program goals. Doing so requires an acknowledgement of these four conceptual steps. First is the need to appropriately plan. followed by the actual doing, implementing projects and tracking progress. An effective management system then has formalized processes to check and act, specific steps to synthesize available information about the program in question, and, if appropriate, recommend adjustments to the overall plan. Developing this type of formalized adaptive management program for the Lake Tahoe TMDL is the explicit goal of the TMDL Management System Project. The project was funded through Sierra Nevada Public Lands Management Act, and the contract is administered by our partners at the Nevada Division of Environmental Protection. We have a plan. The TMDL, the Associated Basin Plan Amendment, and the regulatory requirements for local governments are the basis for our plan to restore Lake Tahoe's transparency. There's a lot of doing going on. Urban stormwater treatment projects, forest management, stream restoration efforts, and regional planning to address atmospheric pollutants. What's needed is a better program to track TMDL implementation progress. The crediting program provides us with an extraordinarily robust tool to track the doing of our urban partners, and the adaptive management of that program and the associated tools are a primary focus of the management system project. As we gather information from research, monitoring, and on-the-ground experience, the pollutant load reduction model, the rapid assessment methodologies, and the crediting program itself will all likely need adjustment, and the management system will guide that process to make those changes. Compared with the crediting program for urban stormwater, the tracking mechanisms for non-urban sources are less well-defined. To address this, the management system project will help establish activity-based tracking measures for the non-urban sources. These tracking measures will be developed at a level commensurate with the relative magnitude of these pollutant sources and the related load reduction opportunities. For the forested source, the Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit has taken the lead on organizing forest management partners to develop appropriate activity tracking and reporting procedures. We anticipate that reports will be submitted annually to describe such actions as acres of fuels reduction work completed and planned, miles of roads and trails decommissioned and/or best management practices applied, and other implementation actions taken in the forested area. In some cases, the Water Board may also request a more robust quantitative analysis to evaluate whether proposed activities are expected to increase average annual loading. Stream channel restoration efforts are relatively easy to track, and at a minimum, we expect to document the linear feet of banks restored. Other metrics may include vegetation density and composition, area of restored floodplain, and the frequency of overbank flows. There's also research underway now to help resource managers better understand the amount of fine sediment and nutrients that may be deposited on floodplain surfaces, and the Management System Project will consider how that information can support the adaptive management process. Finally, many of the measures taken to reduce atmospheric dust overlap with forest and urban load reduction actions. The Management System Project will look at different ways to track these benefits, and will also look at how best to capture the expected nutrient reductions from various transportation management practices. Most importantly, the Management System Project will establish formal processes for gathering and synthesizing information related to the TMDL. This includes accrediting program reports, non-urban source category tracking details, and other relevant research and monitoring findings. This information synthesis will support a defined and transparent process for making decisions on whether or not our plan, the TMDL policy, needs to be adjusted. These tracking, data synthesis, and change recommendation procedures will be documented in a management system handbook that will guide Water Board and NDEP staff to implement the adaptive management process. Finally, the TMDL management system will develop a web-based public reporting platform to share this programmatic information with the general public. Folks will be able to assess the implementation tracking details and view the synthesis of findings to see how that information may be used to influence policy. The TMDL management system is a really important step. It's a demonstration of our commitment to assessing and reporting progress and adaptively managing the Lake Tahoe TMDL's clarity restoration effort into the future. The project just got underway early this year and is a multi-year project, so we will be updating the board as the project develops into the future. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions the board might have.
Mr. Diaz.
This is a great report. A lot of good work being done. Very encouraging to hear. I would like to hear more, and maybe you said it already, but it went by me and I'm aware of words.
I talked to you about that. I know that.
So I'd just like to hear a little bit more about the activity-based tracking. I used to work for a different organization. One of the things I really like about the way the water law is written is that the focus is on, as my former modeling boss put it, outputs. So performance is how we put it in the water world, as opposed to, as my boss put it, inputs, or as you put it here, activity. So is there anything, or have you developed the tracking for these three sources enough to know whether there will be incentives to focus activities for those aspects of those sources where the greatest benefit to the lake will occur, as opposed to crediting those sources for doing activities that may be the least expensive for them to do but aren't providing the most benefit to the lake?
Could you repeat the question?
No.
Yes.
Sure.
So the Lake Tahoe TMDL implementation plan identifies, so when we looked at the pollutant load reduction opportunities, you may recall that we conducted some pretty detailed analyses of where our load reduction opportunities lie within the landscape. That information, that analysis, that report, those findings were the basis for our implementation plan. So what that found was is most of our opportunities, not surprisingly, lie within the urban area. Consistent, again, with sort of my first slide that indicated the bulk of the problem is in the urban. So again, not surprising that a bulk of our opportunity also lies within the urban. We looked at a number of different opportunities in the forested landscape, different ways to manage stream channel restoration projects and atmospheric deposition, and found that, in general, existing programs, policies, and projects are on track to achieve the type of load reductions that are commensurate with the scale of the problem. There are other load reduction opportunities in the forest. We found that you can go out and go after legacy roads, and you can do a bunch of very intensive restoration work at extraordinary cost for very little benefit. So the type of restoration activities and the type of management activities that our forest partners undertake at this time, again, targeting those areas where there are direct connectivity to surface waters, for instance, on unpaved roads and trails, focusing, all of the regulations that are in place to manage vegetation management work, the type of process-based stream restoration that we use, there are a bunch. All of those things make sense not only from a TMDL perspective, but a larger watershed management perspective. So we found that those items are what are most appropriate for achieving our TMDL goals. In short, we found there's no need to dramatically shift the behavior of the type of management that's happening from the other sources. As such, to get at your first question, I think, regarding outputs and inputs, what we really are establishing for the other sources is a type of tracking process that's very consistent with other TMDLs throughout the state and nation, where we expect that if these things are done, this type of load reduction will occur. Unlike other TMDLs, we have some analysis behind that. We're not just waving our arms loosely. We have pretty detailed work that was conducted, again, through load reduction opportunity analysis. We gathered local, regional, and national experts in the field, did our best to estimate the type of benefits we could expect. So we have a pretty good sense of, if these things take place, we will see the type of load reductions that we need to see. That's not to suggest that we can't do more monitoring, that we should stop assessing those things, because we should, and we can. We need, and the management system is set up to establish the opportunity to gather that information, use that research, use that monitoring, use some of those modeling findings to determine whether or not our initial analysis of what we thought we could get for those actions was on target or not, and incorporate that information into the process to say, well, do we need to shift policy to steer activities in another direction? So at this time, we are focused on, again, we don't have any good information right now about what's being done, when, where, and how. So our first step is to get that information, get a better understanding of what's happening on the landscape with respect to these non-urban sources, so then we can at least see whether or not those actions are consistent with what we anticipated would occur in the TMDL implementation plan, And then we can start asking more targeted questions about the efficacy of those actions at actually achieving the load reductions. So there's always work to be done. We're looking at the realities of our internal resource constraints as well as the resource constraints of our partners, trying to balance the needs of the monitoring and reporting information with our needs for that information. So there's a lot of good work happening out there that is going to help inform this. As I indicated, we just started this effort. So in terms of what those, what level, what scale of detail we're going to be tracking activities, I can't speak to that right now. There's a lot of discussion going on what that might look like, but you know, what we're thinking now is we should probably align it with the type of analysis that we did initially for the TMDL. We have the load reduction opportunity analysis. Let's look at tracking those activities that we looked at in the first place. And then there's a lot of good research, as I indicated, going on with stream channel restoration, for instance. There's a lot of water quality benefit there that we need to better understand. Once we start to gather that information, this process, the TMDL management system, will provide us the formal way to incorporate that information and come to you and for NDEP to come to their governing bodies and decide whether or not there needs to be any change in how we are moving forward.
Okay.
Did I answer your question?
Well, let me see.
I didn't know
this
your
is
question.
What I understood. You tell me if I understood it correctly, which is only a small slice of what you just said. But basically what I understood you to say is that the pollutant reduction opportunity report identified those activities in the forest uplands, the stream channels, and atmospheric that would be most cost effective to address.
Yes.
And that these are the activities you are proposing to track as opposed to activities which are less cost effective to track.
Initially, so, yes. I don't want to say that we are going to limit ourselves to tracking just those things that were in there.
Well,
the emphasis will be on those.
Yes. My concern has already been addressed because it's built in by carrying forward the information from the PRO report.
Of course.
Okay.
Good question. Thank you. No, it's good discussion, and there's a lot of really good discussion happening right now about what that looks like. And again, really impressed and grateful for our Forest Service partners. Sue Norman with the Forest Service has stepped up and taken the lead on starting to define that process of what type of information we'll get, on what basis, at what level of detail. And there's a meeting next month with all the Forest partners and ourselves and the DEP to start that dialogue a little bit more and say, is this consistent with what we want to track? Our management system contractors are going to be part of that discussion so we can seamlessly put this stuff forward. So. It's exciting stuff. It's complicated, and we have a lot of work to do. That's a short answer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, your question wasn't short either. Ms. Horn. Dr. Horn.
It's a pleasure to see that areas where we had hunches and somewhat nebulous information, we're finally getting to the point, beginning in some cases, and other cases moving along to where you can actually grasp real data and manipulate it. The $760,000 funding is going to get us 3 years of database writing and management and oversight and all that.
Yes.
3 years. So,
yeah,
so
right.
It's not a one time. It's going to take us 3 years to spend all that money.
Yes. And there's a good portion of that money, again, I don't have a line item budget in front of me. The thinking is the water quality monitoring stations that the permittees are establishing to meet their permit requirements. We'll likely augment some of those with some additional sampling frequencies. We may establish a couple other stations. So the intent is to do some monitoring, augment some of that monitoring, and then also sort of address some of these larger organizational and administrative gaps that we have right now. We need somebody to really lead this effort and be the repository.
Thank you. I will go on to the second part of this agenda item.
Yes, Dan Sussman will talk about the nearshore and aquatic invasive species.
I have no speaker cards on the first part, so we'll move on to the second part.
Great. Thank you, Bob. Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the board. My name is Daniel Sussman, and I'm an environmental scientist here in the South Lake Tahoe office. As Bob mentioned, the focus of my presentation today is on Tahoe's nearshore environment and an update on the Lake Tahoe Aquatic Invasive Species Program. While TMDL implementation will help to maintain and improve the nearshore, there are ongoing concerns about the nearshore, and we're working to better understand the nearshore so that we may address these concerns as we move forward. To this end, tonight, I'll be providing you information related to the process we are currently engaged in and what will come next. We'll pause for questions, and then I'm going to transition to the issue of aquatic invasive species, or AIS, at Lake Tahoe. I'll touch on the species currently at Lake Tahoe, the boat inspection program, and the control programs currently underway. I think it's appropriate to present these topics in tandem, as aquatic invasive species are already affecting parts of Tahoe's nearshore, and invasive species will only continue to have impact on the nearshore in the future. So when we're talking about the nearshore, we're really talking about two things. On the one hand, the nearshore is the area where the public most frequently interacts. It's the part of the lake that we swim in, it's the part of the lake that we wade in, and when we're standing on the shore, it's the part that we look at and remark on how neat it is that we can see the granite boulders, the sandy bottom, and the changes in color. People that feel a real connection to the lake, they feel that connection because of magnificent views and their interactions with the nearshore. But the nearshore is more than what we experience and interact with. It's also distinct from the deep water portions of the lake physically, biologically, and in the light that penetrates nearshore waters. This slide might help us understand what we talk about when we talk about the nearshore. This slide was developed, or this chart with this image was developed to help define the areas that we might monitor moving forward. It's the area of the lake that's 69 feet deep with a minimum distance from shore of 350 feet. The federal government, through the Southern Nevada Public Lands Management Act, provided grant funds to evaluate nearshore ecology and the aesthetics. This nearshore grant is managed by agency representatives from TRPA. Shane Romzos from TRPA is in the audience. The EPA, Jack Landy spoke to you earlier tonight, Nevada Division of Environmental Protection, and myself representing Lahontan. The grantee is a coordinated science team headed by the Desert Research Institute and including members of UC Davis and the University of Nevada at Reno. One purpose of the grant is to really take stock of what we know about the nearshore and to assure a consistent understanding of the nearshore definition among the agencies, which I touched on in the last slide. To manage this treasure, we also want a shared vision for a desired nearshore condition. And we want to evaluate how to best assess the nearshore, what standards and indicators are most appropriate to inform our understanding of the nearshore. Then, once we have a better understanding of which indicators may best inform our understanding of nearshore status, you know, what should we measure, what should we monitor comes next. The monitoring plan might include such parameters as light transmission through the water, aquatic invasive species, how native species are doing, and measurements of just how slippery those rocks are, which we would get at using an index relying on the percentage of rock covered with periphyton and the length of that growth. So once we receive this report, what are the next steps? Well, to answer that question of what next, I'm going to have you look to this year's California budget bill here on the screen. After receiving the report from the science team, which we anticipate next spring, I'll work with my agency collaborators that I just mentioned to review the report before developing a rough timeline for the next steps in the process. And if you have any questions on this section, on the nearshore section, I'd love to take them now before we move on.
Mr. Sandell, any questions?
Is the legislature intention to provide us with some money for implementing what we've come up with for programs for dealing with the problem that we identified?
I think that's all of our hope.
Dr. Hunter?
Great, then moving on. The Lake Tahoe Aquatic Invasive Species Program consists of 40 public and private partner organizations, including federal and local government, state government, of which Lahontan is one, as well as researchers, public utility districts, private marinas. I'd like to mention also that Ted Baer and Patrick Stone of the TRPA are in the audience representing the program from TRPA's side. Addressing aquatic invasive species can be categorized into prevention, early detection, and control. In subsequent slides, I'll touch on the efforts taken by the Lake Tahoe Aquatic Invasive Species Program in pursuing each of these elements. But before I get into the weeds, as it were, forgive the pun, here are some of the invasive species that we have in Lake Tahoe. So starting at the top left and going clockwise, there's the Asian clam, Eurasian milfoil, Eurasian water milfoil, curly leaf pondweed, largemouth bass on the bottom right, brown bull-headed catfish, which are especially prevalent in Taylor Creek, the signal crawfish, of which there are hundreds of million, and then we also have bluegill and crappie. And as an added bonus, here's a healthy-looking goldfish pulled from Tahoe Keys last year by the California Department of Fish and Game, who were conducting an electroshocking operation in cooperation with a team from the University of Nevada, Reno, that is working on warm water fish invasions here at the lake. This program actually continues through this past summer, and preliminary data indicates that this past spring and summer, the UNR and EFG pulled more than 20,000 non-native warm water fish out of the Lake Tahoe Keys. Vast majority of those, the largemouth bass, but no small numbers for some of the other species. Also, the slide's background might be kind of easier to see if I back up. That's a picture of a bed of Asian clams on the Nevada side of the lake and a bright green algae that can sometimes be associated with such dense clam beds, an obvious impact if that's anywhere near the near shore. So I'd like to return to these three areas, there's the fish again, of invasive species management and what is being done. The first defense against invasive species is prevention. All boats that launch on Lake Tahoe must be inspected for invasive species, such as quagga and zebra mussels, those bottom two on the left, and a host of New Zealand mud snails, which are those little snails on the penny, and a host of other invasive plants and animals before they're allowed to launch. The dots on the maps are some of the main inspection and decontamination sites. A big part of prevention is education, and the program's motto of clean, drain, dries is beginning to take traction, and preliminary data from this past year is seeing a fall in the percentage of boats that show up in need of decontamination. The Lake Tahoe Motorized Boat Inspection and Decontamination Program began in 2007 by TRPA and is staffed largely by folks from the Tahoe Resource Conservation District. It's funded, the program is funded by federal dollars, the SNPLMA again, combined with inspection fees. But this next year is the last year to include guaranteed federal funding, and so a finance plan is currently being developed to identify options, whether they be future funding, program cutbacks, or some sort of combination of both. There's also an education program called Tahoe Keepers, the logo of which is in the center of the screen, which aims to educate non-motorized boaters on invasive species issues and train them how to prevent their kayak, canoe, or paddleboard from spreading invasive species. So if an invasive species makes its way into the lake, we want to know fast, and we want to act on it. Detection of any new invaders is managed through a variety of means. Plankton toads sample the water column for immature quagga and zebra mussels, which float in the water until settling on a place to grow. These are done mostly in the summer once a month. Surveys of the shore and marinas are another way to detect new invaders and also to monitor the spread of existing infestations. As an example, in 2010, the board used the cleanup and abatement account funds to fund a lakewide survey for Asian clams. Also, surveys for invasive plants are generally conducted on an annual basis. The public's also a great source of information, and it was members of the public that first alerted agencies in the basin to the presence of Asian clams way back in 2002. And the Lake Tahoe Watercraft Inspection also has a hotline which folks can call up. If we do find a new invader, a rapid response by the program is the best chance to eradicate the threat. About this time last month, members of the Lake Tahoe AIS program, as well as outside partners like the Coast Guard, were trained in incident command systems and conducted a mock response to a quagga mussel detection in the Tahoe Keys to identify roles, responsibilities, and also gaps in our response protocol, which there were more than a couple. So it was a really good exercise, and we hope to take these lessons and also to conduct, to improve that plan and also to conduct these on an annual basis given funding. Invasive weeds have been a problem in Lake Tahoe since the early 1990s. Projects to eradicate weeds have historically been wholly government-funded, but the program has been trying to leverage the private sector's vested interest in aquatic weed abatement for the past couple of years. A good example is at Lakeside Marina, where earlier this year the owner contributed about $10,000 towards treating 2 acres of Eurasian water milfoil with bottom barriers. As mentioned, bottom barriers can be an effective way to kill weeds by robbing them of light for photosynthesis. In some cases, hand pulling can be effective, but when confronted with challenges such as obstacles, diver-assisted suction is really the most efficient method, and this is when there's a scuba diver that a scuba or someone on a tube to the surface rips out the plant from the lake bed and feeds it into a suction tube. Kind of like what's used for a suction dredge, except none of the lake is actually dredged. It's really just the plant and those materials that are making it to the surface. There's 3 sites in Emerald Bay with milfoil infestation. Here's a before and after picture. On the left, obviously, is the before picture of the infestation near Parsons Rock at the northwest portion of Emerald Bay. This site has been treated for 2 years with a combination of bottom barriers and suction removal. There's a site at Viking's Holm as well, which has been treated 3 successive years, first with a combination of the 2 barriers and suction, and now that it's just sparse plants, just suction removal to clean up the remaining plants every year. Progress. This is a before and after picture near Avalanche Beach, the 3rd site in Emerald Bay. The left one's in 2009, the right one's in 2012. You can see the success of the treatments, again conducted with a combination of barriers and diver-assisted suction. This one has only been treated 1 year, and it's likely that it will need more treatment in the future. Now, multi-year treatments are necessary in Emerald Bay because the bay poses a special challenge. Boats leave the marinas. For example, the Tahoe Keys has a good storage of milfoil, so it'll leave the marina, motor directly to Emerald Bay. That's the destination, as we know, for a lot of recreational boaters. And the milfoil will be attached to their props, and it doesn't slough off until finally the boat slows or stops in Emerald Bay. Now, since 2009, the board has dedicated close to $800,000 to investigate and implement methods to kill Asian clams at Lake Tahoe, and also to survey Lake Tahoe's Asian clam infestation. The Lake Tahoe AIS program has used much of the money, in combination with other state and federal funds, on pilot projects towards perfecting the use of rubber bottom barriers to kill the clams by depriving them of oxygen. The pictures on the right show a barrier being lowered from a barge on the lower right, and then also in the upper right, the installation by a scuba diver on one of these pilot projects. Emerald Bay is really beautiful. We know that. It's one of the most iconic destinations at Lake Tahoe. But it's home to a satellite population of Asian clams approximately 5 acres in size. These 2 pictures, the bottom left and the one in the middle, identify the location of the infestation right in the mouth of the bay. But as I mentioned in the previous slide, there are challenges associated with working towards eradicating invasive species in Emerald Bay. These challenges include the high boater activity, a shallow mouth, relatively strong currents, uneven terrain. The program's past work has given us the confidence that we can overcome these challenges and treat this satellite population with rubber bottom barriers. And to that end, of that approximately $800,000, the state is contributing almost $460,000 to this project. This project is scheduled to begin in the water next week, 5 acres. Barriers will remain on the bottom for 1 year to ensure the greatest possibility of success. And we're hoping that if we do get success with all the challenges inherent to Emerald Bay, that can be applied in a very successful way elsewhere. So now I'll close for your questions.
Mr. Diaz?
No.
Dr. Mr. Sandell.
No, thanks for a nice presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have one comment, the speaker card. Ed Bader.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Ted Thayer. I am the Aquatic Invasive Species Program Coordinator for the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. I'm here tonight actually as co-chair of the Lake Tahoe Aquatic Invasive Species Coordination Committee. And I just wanted to thank the board and staff for continued support of the Lake Tahoe Aquatic Invasive Species Program. You know, the support in terms of financial support as well as technical and policy support has really been critical to the success of this program. And we look forward to continuing to work with the board and staff in the future. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming.
Questions from board members? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you all for the presentation this evening, and we will adjourn. Thank you all for coming. Good job.